Thanks, Steve. I think that was his way of saying it's okay if you think he's weird, and that's okay. Happy Father's Day. Any dads out there today? Yeah? How many of you are just, not even just dads, how many of you are parents? Okay. How many of you are children of parents? Okay, that makes all of us then. I was pretty nervous whenever I first became a dad. I just didn't feel like it fit right whenever, you know, my wife and I were married, I think, for 3 months whenever we found out we were going to have a kid. And I was just like, I'm not a dad. My dad's a dad. My dad has wise sayings, and I don't have any wise sayings. You know, all these years later, I think I have a few wise sayings, but they're just what I think is wise. But my dad used to say, you know, just be careful when you think you stand, lest you fall. He used to say that a lot whenever I started getting cocky about anything. My dad was just real steadfast. Used to say some things that didn't really make sense to me. I just had to kind of figure it out in context. He used to say things like, it's not nice to fool with Mother Nature. And I never really understood what that meant. I never really, even to this day, I haven't really asked him what that meant. I just know that if I was ever going to like sneak up on him from behind or something like that, he would say it then. Like, that would like make me think he was about to hurt me or something. I don't know. And then he used to also say a lot, don't worry about the mule, just load the wagon. That one was one of my favorite ones because that was basically him, whenever I didn't know how something was going to work out, he'd say, don't worry about the mule, just load the wagon. And I just knew that meant he had the other part. All I had to do was figure out my part. You know, I grew up, my dad has been a pastor my entire life. And, I grew up in church. I don't really remember a whole lot of sermons. And I can't tell you the names of everybody I knew in Sunday school. But one thing I always remember every year on Father's Day really stuck out to me was the fact that every single year, our music pastor would always sing the same song. It was during this, I grew up Baptist, so it was, we had special music. We had the special music after the hymns. And, but it wasn't even a Christian song that he sang every year. It was a 70s folk rock song by Harry Chapin that most of us are probably familiar with, Cats in the Cradle. And for those of you who aren't familiar with it, the song is kind of designed to make even the most well-intentioned dad feel like they're not doing a very good job at being a dad. You can't hear that song without going, that's probably me. Like, I'm getting fatherhood all wrong. And at the same time, that also kind of seemed normal to me because that's kind of how I was taught to believe about salvation. That's how I was taught to believe about the Christian faith was, you know, if I ever strayed off the intended path, I may have been getting this whole thing wrong all along. So a lot of it was kind of fear-based. A lot of it was kind of shame-based. But I remember hearing one of the pastors say, like, as far as my faith, I remember one of the pastors always saying, almost every week he would say, do you know that you know that you know that you know that you're saved? And I just remember being a kid going, I might know, I might even know that I know, but I definitely don't know that I know that I know that I know. That's way too much. So basically, for those of you who haven't heard the song, which anybody probably over the age of 30 probably has heard it. It's just about a relationship between a father and the son, and the father's not ever really there for the son. And the son would say, when are you coming home, dad? And the dad would say, I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know, we'll have a good time then. And then the tables kind of turn by the end of the psalm with the son's all the way grown up, and the dad wants to spend time with the son. And the dad would say, when are you coming home, son? And the son would say, I don't know when, but we'll get together then. And then everybody just feels awful at the end of the song. So I do remember that feeling of, even as I first became a dad, is like, what if I get this wrong? It feels like a lot of pressure. Not only that, you immediately fall in love with your children. And so you want so much to be the example for your kids. And it does feel like a whole lot of pressure. I mean, there's a fairly familiar parenting scripture that Solomon wrote in the book of Proverbs, and that's Proverbs 22:6, that says, train a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. That is wise advice from a wise man. I'm not sure exactly what it means completely. I mean, how old is old according to Solomon? That's what I want to know, because when he's old, he won't depart from it. Will he ever depart from it when he's still kind of young? Probably so, because I know I did. I mean, for most of us here, I would say that training up a child in the way he or she should go would probably look like teaching our children to be kind to others, to stick with things, to persevere in things. That's an important thing we teach our kids. To put others' needs in front of your own, to be selfless. Teach them the truths from Scripture that we've learned. Is that what you would think of too? Basically, these are the things that we would train up a child in the way they should go. They're foundational things to teach our children, which is easy enough. We teach our kids these things. They will never depart from these things, and life is going to be easy forever. Has that been your experience too? And even earlier in Scripture, in the book of Leviticus, Moses is really adamant to the Israelites that he's telling them, like, all of your successive generations that are coming up have to live by obedience to God's laws to ensure that you will live safely in the land. So, I mean, maybe Moses was right. Maybe if we did maintain obedience to all of God's laws, maybe if we made sure our kids maintained obedience to all of God's laws, then we would all just live safely in our land. The only problem for me personally and for my kids is that we have not maintained obedience to all of God's laws. There's actually one other really big one that Moses came up with. It's so big that it was in the Big Ten, and that was honor your father and your mother so that your days may be long upon the earth. Again, that's something that we haven't maintained very well in my house. I mean, even just this last week, my wife and I were telling Sophie it was time for her to go to bed, and she didn't honor me or her mother whenever we told her that. So it just, her response didn't feel honoring to me. She just said, not yet. I think that means we're not immune to some things happening where we're not completely safe in our land at our house. So, sometimes whenever I talk to people about the beauty that we find in Scripture and that we read in Scripture, sometimes I like to separate the facts from the truths, because there is a difference. There are things in Scripture that are meant to be read as truth. They're not necessarily meant to be read as cold, hard fact. Proverbs is full of what we call truism. As a matter of fact, in literature, there is a term called proverbial truism, which basically means something has a basis in fact from looking at other examples. It's all things that are really good ideas. You know, whenever we read in Proverbs, whatever it is, it's a really good idea to follow. But at the same time, if we see someone who passes away young from a disease or a tragic accident, we can't immediately say that it was because that child didn't honor their mother and father. Life just isn't quite that concrete. But I think there's a part of us that really wishes that raising our kids was as easy as just, we get to tell our kids what's good for them, what's right for them, and this is what's wrong for them, this is what's not healthy for them, and then everybody live happily ever after. I mean, that's what I wish could happen. But a lot of that just isn't reality. It wasn't reality for me whenever I was growing up. I mean, my parents instilled biblical values in me that have somehow stayed with me all of these years, but and I'm really blessed because of it, but I had to find out for myself if the grass was greener on the other side or not. I had to. My brother, not so much. He listened and said, yeah, I think that's a good idea. I had to go make sure that it was a good idea by doing the exact opposite of what I was taught. And I caused myself a lot of pain because of it. I mean, as parents, I think we have this primal instinct to want to protect our kids from harm, not just physical harm, but any kind of emotional harm. And that's not a bad thing because God gave us that instinct. God put that instinct in us. And yet our kids still get sick and they still scrape their knees and they still get broken hearts and they still rebel as teenagers and as young adults. So what are we supposed to do with that? I mean, like I said, all of us have these protective instincts with our children, but I think sometimes we're actually doing more harm than good for our kids when we try to soften every emotional blow that our kids receive, both physically and emotionally. Because I think we develop this tendency to want to put a silver lining on everything for our kids. They're struggling and having a hard time, and we want them to feel better. We want to turn an unhappy situation around. So our first instinct is to go to a response that kind of minimizes the negatives and emphasizes the positive. And again, that's a good thing, but it's kind of like we want to make our kids forget about what's upsetting them so we can all hurry up and get back to being happy. And we sometimes brush these incredible learning experiences for our kids under the rug. You know, one thing I've learned, not only from my children, but from the people I pastor, is that it's really rare that my right response to somebody that's in pain is actually making the pain go away. When someone is in pain, they're not necessarily looking for the right response. What they're actually looking for is connection. There's a huge difference from me saying the right thing and me connecting to the person that's hurting. That's what Scripture means when it tells us to mourn with those who mourn. Sit in it with them. We don't pretend that the pain isn't there. We sit in the pain with them. And ironically enough, when we try to fix our kids' pain, sometimes we're only teaching them that these emotions that they're feeling are the bad ones. These are the bad emotions. So they in turn have to find a way to have a good emotion. But the pain's still there. And it just gets shoved down somewhere deep until it has to be dealt with at a later time. And once all those bad emotions keep getting shoved down for long enough, they come out involuntarily all at once. They explode. But our kids still haven't learned how to deal with these feelings. You know, one of the things we talk about, I lead a recovery group, and one of the things we talk about in recovery is that we have to take responsibility for the negative behavior for our feelings, but our feelings themselves aren't bad. Feelings are just feelings. So we are responsible for any of the behavior that comes from our feelings, but the initial feeling itself, it's just a feeling. They aren't good or bad. They can feel bad, but I think if we're doing our work we're called to do in our spiritual walk, in our walk with Christ, we learn from our feelings and our emotions. We learn to see our feelings as pointers, kind of as indicators. Does anyone in here have to drive in Houston traffic ever? So you know what those feelings are like. For some of us who are susceptible to road rage, getting cut off in traffic, that can ruin some of our whole day, which means there's work for us to do. I mean, that's really what it means, because when a stranger ruins your mood for the whole day, you're giving that stranger way too much power over you. So if I'm driving down the road and someone cuts me off and makes me slam on the brakes, I'll feel those feelings. Those feelings will start coming up a little bit, and I'll notice the feelings. I'll point them out and say, that is anger. And then that will be an indicator to me that I got to go to work. The work I have to do is, first, I get to have my feeling. So my feeling doesn't have me. I get to have it. But there's work to do, because then I have to look and say, why am I mad because somebody cut me off? Was I trying to get my peace and joy from the fact that nobody would cut me off today? Is that where it was trying to come from? Is that where my peace and joy really needs to come from? Or can I go back to the source and say, like, God is giving me my peace and joy in spite of my circumstances. And if my peace and joy can only come from this guy not getting in front of me, I'm in trouble. So I get to feel it. I get to look at it. I get to see it. That's what, and so when it comes to our kids, it's okay for us to remind them that they're going to be experiencing these feelings that we've thought of as bad feelings for the rest of their lives. We might as well start recognizing and dealing with these feelings sooner than later, because these feelings will come up later and we'll go, I didn't know how to deal with them when I was a kid. I definitely don't know how to deal with them now. So I think the most important thing we can teach our children is that it's not that circumstances are always needing to go right. It's that we have access to the one that holds our past, present, and future in his hands. Life is hard, but because of the finished work of Christ, we don't have to pretend that it isn't hard, because we serve a God who is in the process of making all things new. So we look at it two ways. Is everything going bad? And they, by the way, they're watching us. You know, this is the worst volatile political climate in the history of, since I've been alive, that I've ever seen. Our kids are watching what we say and do about this stuff. Is it our job to show them all the places where it's going wrong? Or is it our job to show all the places where God is making things new? We do not pledge allegiance to anything more than we pledge allegiance to a kingdom and a king. That's where our allegiance is pledged. We believe that what we say and do in this world, on earth as it is in heaven, actually matters. Jesus shows us on a regular basis that he is close to the brokenhearted. So why are we so scared of having a broken heart? Why are we so scared of our kids having a broken heart? God shows up in that a lot. Jesus shows us that his strength is perfected in our weakness. Therefore, we don't have to try with our own strength to do it the right way. His strength becomes perfected in our weakness. We say sometimes at our church, like, the word strong Christian is kind of an oxymoron. It's not that we're trying our hardest to be as close to Jesus as we can be. It's that we're getting ourself, our ego, out of the way so Christ can be Christ in us and through us. He does a way better job of being Christ in me than I can of imitating a secondhand version of him. He does it. We can tell our kids that. He's telling us to go ahead and let go and surrender, not pretend, not to teach our kids, put on your best face. I got that too whenever I was a kid. That was another one of my dad's sayings, was, you better have a smile on your face and a song in your heart. Like, I'll try. So he's telling us to go ahead and let go, surrender, because everything really is okay. Because everything is really okay, we don't have to pretend that it's okay. We can say, okay, it doesn't feel okay. But there's a deeper thing in there that knows it's more than okay. Nobody escapes being wounded. We are all wounded people. This is a part of our faith, recognizing that. recognizing our depravity so that we can, like we say in recovery, it's like we see our powerlessness so we can surrender to a power that's much greater than anything I can come up with on my own. The main question is not how can we hide these wounds so that we don't have to feel embarrassed. The question is how can we put our woundedness into the service of God and others? When our wounds cease to be a source of shame, and then they start to become a source of healing, and we become what Henry Nouwen calls a wounded healer. We become a wounded healer. Like Jesus in John 11, whenever he's going and seeing Mary and them, and Lazarus had already died, he was going in about to do a work in there. But whenever he got there, he didn't say, hey, don't worry about it. Everything's okay. It's really not that bad. It's okay. Instead, he sat in that with them. He cried. He felt it with them. He connected. Sometimes that connection in despair is what actually gets us out of despair. It's not the saying the right thing that's going to make it all feel better and go away. It's not sugarcoating. Jesus is God's wounded healer. By his wounds, we are healed. Jesus' suffering and death brought joy and life. Jesus' humiliation brought glory. Jesus' rejection brought a community of love. As followers of Jesus, we can allow our wounds to bring healing. We don't have to run and hide from them. We don't have to pretend they're not there. This is a process in my life and in my ministry that I've seen firsthand. It's a process where life comes from death, not the other way around. It's the ultimate example that Jesus gave us. You know, Jesus showed us in a very big way, in a big, literal, physical way, that love wins out over fear. He showed us in a big physical way that death no longer leads to decay. It leads to life. So what he showed us in that physical way, we can be fought whenever we take up our cross, when we die to self. We can be doing emotionally, spiritually, what he did in a physical. We know that that place that we don't want to go to inside of ourselves because we've never gone in there and looked, that wounded place, that place that we're most afraid to go inside of ourselves is also the birthplace of hope and freedom. It's because of the resurrection that that's possible. So that's a process we can trust. That place inside of ourselves that we don't want to go, that's a process we can trust. I do trust that process. I trust that process for me. I trust that process for you. I trust that process for my wife. I don't all the way trust that process for my kids, if I'm going to be totally honest. It's not that I don't trust it. I'm just too scared of it because I don't want my kids to experience pain. There's something in me. Whenever I'm looking at my youngest and I just see her face change from glowing happy to sad about something, even if it's something that I know she doesn't need, that she wants, there's this thing in me that it's like, I have to make that pain go away. So what do I do whenever it's hard for me to trust that with my own kids? I have to see that God just keeps making all things new inside of me. I have to keep seeing that God makes broken things whole inside of me, and then I get to show that and live that out to my children. I have to show the process that they're being invited into. It's not about getting it right with my kids. It's not about getting them out of their childhood unscathed with my kids. It's about the connection that happens. Brené Brown calls it sitting with your children in the dark. It's the connection that happens when we get to experience empathy and sit with our kids in the dark. Just to give an example, for those of us with younger children, you know, if our kids come home from school and they're sad, and my son's 4 or 5 years old. He's not now. But if he comes home as a 4 or 5 year old and says, my friend was mean to me today. He didn't want to play with me. My instinct is to immediately pull him out of that feeling by saying, well, forget about him. There's lots of other kids that you can play with that would love to play with you. And then that would be an encouraging thing to tell him, like, don't worry about this guy. Look at all these other kids that would love to play for you. With you. It's okay. That's the silver lining that I want to hurry up and give my kids. But if I'm wanting to use this situation as a way to connect and help my kid not be afraid of those feelings and to help my kid begin to mature emotionally, I may instead say something like, I know that doesn't feel good. That probably made you feel lonely. I know what it's like to feel lonely too. But then I remember that God's promises, he promises me that he's never going to leave me or forsake me. He always wants to spend time with me. So even though it doesn't feel good to feel lonely, it's okay. Because sometimes whenever you feel lonely, it can be a reminder to go back and think about what God's promises are. I don't have to pull, you see the difference in that? I don't have to sugarcoat anything for my kids. I don't have to pull them away from a feeling that I deemed as bad. Instead, I get to connect with my kid and say, this is an indicator that our best efforts to make ourselves happy aren't getting us there. We have to surrender to something better. And that's the Spirit of Christ in us that's on earth as it is in heaven. I don't have to create a diversion just because they're uncomfortable. The truth is, sometimes I want to create a diversion, not just because what they're saying is making them uncomfortable, but also because what they're saying is making me uncomfortable. I'm uncomfortable with my kid feeling that way. So I have to keep going back to my place of surrender. That's really our job as parents. I mean, and ironically enough, when we stop trying to sugarcoat these experiences for our kids and instead sit in the dark with our kids, that actually makes them feel better than when we try to pretend that their negative experiences didn't happen. That's the ironic part. That's God making beauty out of ashes. So, like I said before, Scripture says we mourn with those who mourn, but Scripture also says we don't mourn as those that have no hope. Even in that mourning together, there's this little light that happens. This hope. None of us will ever perfect parenthood. There's probably lots of ways that I'll hear later in my kid's life that I screwed them up in lots of ways. Like, there's no getting out of it. But we don't have to be perfect parents, and we don't have to have perfect kids. If we can teach and show our kids that we can mourn and still have hope, we've instilled in them the way of Christ. That's really what the way of Christ is. We mourn and we have hope. There is joy in the mourning. Remember, it was Jesus who said, in this life, there will be trouble, but take heart, I've overcome the world. Jesus did not say, if you do it right, you won't have trouble. He said, in this life, you will have trouble. That was a declarative, definitive statement. But, I love the but. Take heart, I've overcome the world. So as we move forward in our parenting, I think that we can instill some really incredible things for our kids if instead of being addicted to getting it right, we instead are vulnerable with our children. We tell our we don't have to sugarcoat. Whenever they're hurting, we can take a look at what's causing the underlying pain. We always get back to the same thing. It's just like road rage for us adults. It always goes back to the same thing. I'm trying to, like, if my daughter is mad because she can't have her fourth dill pickle in a row, we get to talk about that like it's a spiritual exercise. You know, she might not want to have that conversation at the time, but we actually do have that conversation. You thought that if you had that fourth pickle, that's what was going to make everything okay in your life. And it just wasn't. Three is fine. So we get to keep going back and showing the same example of anything that I am going for in my life outside of me to try to make me better. That's the root of all sin. That's the root of all addiction. That's what we talk about in recovery, is the fact that the first sin wasn't actually the eating of the fruit. The first sin was Eve got convinced that she needed something other than what she already had access to in order to make her okay. That is the root of everything wrong inside of us. I get convinced that I need something outside of me instead of what God's doing inside of me to be okay. Because I don't like the way this feels, and I don't know how to deal with these feelings of not liking the way this feels. So I get to go back inside and let God do the work. So, dads, happy Father's Day. You're doing great. Let's ask God to bless this time, and then I just want to give you guys a blessing.